Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to our show here. It is Tuesday, February 2nd, 2010 here. Happy Groundhog's Day. As you probably heard earlier, Punxsutawney Phil saw his shadow scamper back into his burrow, so we're going to have 6 more weeks of winter. There is no truth to the rumor that Albert Gore had hired an assassin to shoot the groundhog so that it wouldn't see his shadow and winter would come to a swift end and we'd be back to this whole global warming thing here. So, but that didn't happen, and so the groundhog saw his shadow, and we're in for a little bit more winter weather according to the folklore. Now, at the risk of engaging in a little bit kind of a personal, you know, plug here, I would like to remind everybody that tonight is the season premiere for season 6 of Lost. This is the last season of the show where all of the questions that have accumulated over the last 5 years are going to be answered during this season. And I normally don't talk about my day job, but I did feel I wanted to mention it just a little tiny bit. Now, I'm not going to give away any secrets, so don't call up and ask me. The only thing I do feel comfortable sharing with you is looking at the sets that they built for this season. It is spectacular. What you're going to see here during the show this season. So tonight's the season premiere. They've got a little 1 hour sort of get you caught up and get you to where we are in the story for those of you who you know, may have gotten a little lost, so to speak, over the last couple of seasons. And then it'll be followed by the 2 hour season premiere. It's a 2-part episode. So that's on tonight. All right, getting on to more serious things here. Obviously, the chat room is open. The webcam is running. We got visitors signing on to Ustream. Phone lines are open, 866-582-9933, 866-582-9933. Othman's in the control room, ready to pick up the phone and put you on the air with whatever it is that happens to concern you today. Now, interesting development earlier today from Iran. There are two developments taking place, one of which you just heard on the news broadcast. Iran has opened discussions regarding the possibility of releasing the 3 American hikers, the accused spies, who, for whatever reason, possibly to create an issue, walked across the border into Iran, despite being told by the locals, do not go over there, that's Iran, they will arrest you if you go across the border without permission. And so the hiker said, okay, we've got GPS, and they went across the border, and they got arrested, and they've been there ever since. Iran is now saying that they are willing to trade these 3 Americans in exchange for Iranians currently held by the United States, very possibly some of the ones who've been tortured and are now in places like Bagram and Guantanamo and Abu Ghraib and so forth and so on. So that is definitely developing a great deal of interest. Now, the other story, and I was rather surprised this was not on the news break. Basically, Ahmadinejad is now saying they're ready to go ahead with the deal to send uranium abroad in exchange for already made nuclear fuel rods and medical isotopes. Now, of course, this was the deal that the United States has been kind of pushing on, and the original deal was, you know, we will give you some of our uranium, and you will give us some fuel rods, and the United States and Israel were saying, no, you've got to give us all your uranium, and then we'll give you back the fuel rods, and Iran said, no, we're not going to do that, for the simple reason that the last time they did a deal like that, Iran never got the fuel rods. They got screwed over, to put it delicately. So, but now Ahmadinejad is saying they're willing to proceed with the deal under some kind of a situation where limited amounts of enriched uranium will be sent out of Iran as already made fuel rods and medical isotopes come back in. Now, from the point of view of Iran, this is a tremendous concession because under the terms of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, Iran is, they're following the rules. They're allowed to have power stations. They're allowed to make fuel rods for the power stations. They're allowed to make medical isotopes. They are in compliance with the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. In demanding that Iran surrender their rights under the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, it is the United States that is in violation of the NNPT. And not just in that area, under Article 4 of the NNPT, the United States is supposed to be in Iran helping them build power stations and nuclear isotope facilities. That's in the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, which the U.S. has signed. And by that signature, United States, under its treaty obligations, is supposed to recognize Iran's right to peaceful uses of nuclear power. Now, on the other hand, Israel, which has nuclear weapons in a used-to-be clandestine facility underneath the Dimona reactor, has never signed the NPT. They're refusing IAEA inspections, which, by the way, as a side note, means that every single one of your tax dollars the U.S. government sends to Israel is an illegal act. It is a criminal act. It is theft from you to send to Israel in defiance of United States law, which we have covered many, many times before. So Israel's playing by the rules. The U.S. and Israel are not. But the one bit of news here, of course, is that we've been seeing this propaganda run up for an invasion of Iran. These two announcements, prisoner exchange and going ahead with some version of the nuclear fuel swap deal, are basically going to pull the rug out from under the war hawks. Now, of course, the war hawks, they don't care about prisoner exchange, and they don't even care about the uranium. They want the war. And what we're probably going to see here is a repeat of what we saw in Iraq. Because remember, toward the very end of this whole, we're trying hard to negotiate with Iraq, Iraq said, all right, come in and inspect anything you want. Look anywhere you want. Look in the presidential palace. Look in our bathroom. Look under the bed. I don't care. And the U.S. responded by saying, well, it's too little, too late. You had your chance and you muffed it, and the invasion was on. And I think we'll probably see the same thing again here, because the war machine seems to have cranked up and there's a huge amount of inertia there. Now, what was really rather funny is as soon as the announcement came from Iran regarding the prisoner exchange and regarding the nuclear fuel swap, we saw a new propaganda campaign launch all across Twitter, basically saying that Iran would test detonate a nuclear bomb on February 11th. And that sort of came, there was a huge wave of it, and then it kind of went away. Probably because you can't have a nuclear bomb anywhere in the world without its immediate location being made obvious in seismic records. If somebody sets off a nuclear bomb to try and blame on Iran, and it's not actually in Iran, the game is up. So who knows what's going on there. But obviously the war hawks, they're out there still pushing. Daniel Pipes, known neocon, known Israel firster, was out there making this absurd comment that the only way Barack Obama can save his presidency is by bombing Iran. And that, of course, is utter nonsense. Bombing Iran is simply going to take this nation further in the direction that has undermined the credibility of the entire U.S. government. If Obama wants to save his presidency, call off the war, shut down the Defense Department, and cut everybody's federal taxes by 50%. The economy will light up like a Christmas tree. The Democrats will win big in November. And we'll all go back to having the kind of lifestyles that we have worked our entire lives to build here in the United States of America. We can't seem to get that, but that's how he could save his presidency. Bombing Iran is not going to be it. But Daniel Pipes is basically out there showing that it's still the Israeli firsters who are out there trying to set up a situation where your loved ones, your family members, your sons, your daughters, your brothers and sisters, your husbands, your wives are going to go to the Middle East and die in yet another war for Israel. So, you know, that's what's going on here. You know, Pipes is out there. Obama can give orders for the U.S. military to destroy Iran's nuclear weapon capacity. Iran doesn't have a nuclear weapon capacity. Nobody has found any indication that Iran is doing anything other than building power stations and making medical isotopes. Israel, on the other hand, we have photographs of a covert, used to be, covert weapons plant underneath the Dimona reactor. Israel is the country that's out there with a secret weapons lab. And they're pointing fingers at everybody else. Now, I don't know if it's, you know, it's okay for us to do it because we believe everybody else is doing it excuse, which Israel uses a lot. They justify their Holocaust on the Gazans by saying, look, Germany did it to us, therefore we have the right to do it to the Palestinians. You know, which is the same mentality where if your boss gives you a hard day at the office, you come home and you beat up your wife or you kick your dog. That really is not an appropriate reaction to that kind of situation. If Israel has a problem with Germany, they should deal with Germany. But since they're getting all these free warships from Germany, I guess they're going to make nice. We're going to take a break. When we come on back, 866-582-9933, 866-582-9933, and we'll be right back.
This is Cast Acadia Public Radio.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Call Mike now at 866-582-9933. 866-582-9933.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And interesting little bit of news came through this morning. The actor, Wesley Snipes, quite a popular star, has been acquitted of federal income tax fraud. Now, he still was found guilty on three misdemeanor charges of failure to file income tax returns. But those are misdemeanor charges, and yes, he still owes the tax, and there's going to be some penalties and stuff. But he has avoided the 16 years of prison that he could have been sentenced to if he'd been convicted of the conspiracy to defraud the federal government. Now, the issue on this case, and the reason that I'm in agreement with the court for having found him not guilty, Wesley Snipes truly believed that the income tax is illegal. He had advice from an accountant at the time. It couldn't document the 16th Amendment was ratified. And so here's the interesting thing about the law. If you set out and say, I'm going to screw the government and I'm going to not pay them the money that I know I owe them, then you're in trouble and you're going to go to jail. But in this particular case, the reason the court let him go is Wesley Snipes, on the basis of the available information to him, honestly believe that there is a serious question whether the federal income tax is legal or not. And there have been quite a few cases that have gone to court where the defendant has stood up and said, look, to any reasonable person looking at the available information, and especially given the absolute utter stonewall that we get from the Internal Revenue Service, a reasonable person would be led to conclude there is a doubt. The government lied to us about Saddam's nuclear bombs. They lied to us about Climategate. They lied to us about the swine flu. How do we know they're not lying to us about the income tax? The answer is they don't. Now, in getting this deal, Wesley Snipes has basically stipulated that, yes, I'm going to file the taxes and I'm going to pay the taxes and the penalties. And it's going to be a lot of money because he's a very rich man. But it is going to be a major inconvenience for him financially. But he has avoided jail, and I am happy for him. I'm not a big, huge Wesley Snipes fan, but I'm very happy for him. But the principle does remain. We need to ask ourselves, you know, given the number of lies that we have been told by this government, how do we know the income tax is legal? How do we know the 16th Amendment was actually ratified? The answer is we don't. We can't. We can't take anything this government says at face value. Which brings me to the next story here. Barack Obama, of course, he campaigned, like any presidential candidate, he campaigns, there's going to be no new taxes and blah, 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 blah. Now we're finding out, as part of his 2010 budget, that the Obama administration is planning to cut more than $1 trillion from the deficit over the next decade by relying on so-called backdoor tax increases on the middle class. Why are they taxing the middle class? Well, because the poor don't have anything anymore. They've already completely wiped out the lower classes and the working classes of the American society. Now they're starting to feed a little bit higher. We're a nation that is feeding on itself. Okay? And so now they're going to tax the people who've got a little bit more money. And sooner or later, as the middle class gets crushed out of existence, the government will start taxing the ultra-rich, and that's when the ultra-rich will start saying, you know, maybe we ought to start financing the opposition here. Because the bottom line is you cannot tax and spend your way out of a recession and depression. You cannot borrow your way out of a recession or a depression. You have to produce your way out of a recession or depression. You have to make something of value. And I don't mean leveraged buyouts and green mail and all these little tricks that the open-air casino called Wall Street likes to pretend are products. They like to pretend the money has become the product. It isn't. It's just pretty printed paper. And they shuffle it back and forth, and they set up a bunch of rules where they get to keep more of it than everybody else. But that's not productivity. That's game playing. We need to go back to being a nation that makes stuff, or we will never be out of this hole. And obviously, as you can tell from this backdoor tax increase situation, the government's only solution to prolong their own power and authority in the face of crushing out-of-control government debt is to soak you for the money. You have one of two choices right now. You can either let the government tax you into total abject poverty and suck away everything you have worked for your entire life, or you can decide that now is the time to stop throwing good money after bad and say, look, giving any more of our money to this government is like giving a bottle of scotch and the keys to the family car to a bunch of teenage boys. And say, enough is enough. The government got into this mess without our permission. The government can get out of this mess or not without our help. Nobody signed a contract agreeing to underwrite the government's loans. The government just assumes arrogantly that they can go on borrowing and spending as much as they want, and we, the American people, will always work our lives away and commit the lives of our children and grandchildren to paying off the government's debts. That absolutely is not what we agreed to do. Nobody's ever agreed to that. Nobody has ever agreed to such reckless government spending. And when they talk about they want to cut back on the deficit, they're admitting they're going to go on spending more money than they take in. They're admitting they're not going to balance the books. They're going to go on spending more money than they really have. This has become the norm for this government. And it's assumed you will always be willing to sacrifice so that the government can have more. The unending message we get from the government is, you must make do with less so that we, the government, may have more. Why do we have to have more? Well, because of swine flu, and because of global warming, and because of Saddam's nukes, and because of Osama bin Laden, and all these other little made-up excuses that they create to justify taking money away from you. Now they're trying to bring back the Cold War. We've got rockets aimed at Russia again in order to goad them into pointing rockets back at us. And then our Pentagon will say, oh, we got to have more money because we've got to have bigger rockets to point at the Russians. They're bringing back the Cold War. They're bringing back the arms race because it's a huge moneymaker for them. And they make all these weapons, most of which don't even work properly, and they put them on parade and on display, and they take the money, and they enjoy their lavish lifestyles, and they laugh at you for your silliness in believing it. They think you're going to go along with it a second time, because your parents did back in the 1950s. They got soaked for trillions and trillions of dollars for a bunch of big, shiny weapons, which did nothing but sit there and gather rust and corrosion. And they're trying to bring it back. Eisenhower warned us about the military-industrial complex. They didn't get the swine flu. They didn't get climate gate. So they're going to go back to the old tried and true, let's wave Russians at them, and they'll salute the flag, and they'll throw their money and their children at us. It's a scam. It is a scam. The government is in dire trouble. They're trying to figure out anything that they can say or do that is going to get you to give them the money they need to float their little party along just another few years, another few months, another few weeks. But the bottom line is, look at the numbers. Even if the federal government nationalized, which is a fancy word for stealing, even if the federal government nationalized all the personal assets in this country, all the real estate, all the cars, all the businesses, all your jewelry, everything in your home, it's still only 25% of what the federal government owes in debt. The government owes more money than they can ever repay. They're doomed. It's inevitable. Let's stand back and let the government have the debt it has worked so hard to bring upon itself. We're going to take a break for commercials. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network. You're listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. And one of our sharp-eared listeners wrote in during the break to point out the Wesley Snipes story is actually, it's an older story. One of our members had put it up at What Really Happened and didn't date it. And so it actually happened a couple of years ago. But it's still good news, and it still underscores the fact that there is a legitimate reason to doubt you know, and if you honestly believe, you know, there's an issue, you know, it's kind of hard for a prosecution to win if in your best belief there is reason to doubt the tax laws. Now, obviously, right now, the court systems, especially with a government that is on the edge of bankruptcy and is just so desperate for your money that they would come up with climate gate and swine flu gate and all the rest of that, you know, they own the court buildings and they own the judges. And so it's a very, very dicey situation. But there have been legal challenges and there have been cases where the tax protesters have been acquitted. That didn't apply to the Brown family, obviously, but they were jailed more for the threat they presented to the federal officers. At some point, though, there are going to be enough people who are going to say, look, you can't prove that the taxes are legal. We're just not going to bother anymore. And I think for most of Americans, and we've seen those commercials all over the TV set for tax resolution services. It's an epidemic problem. And it isn't a question of these Americans not wanting to pay their taxes. They don't have it. Their jobs have been taken away. Their businesses have collapsed. And the money is being drawn out of our civilization, our society, and poured all over Wall Street. And that's exactly the reverse of what should be done. Now, Obama's out there, and he's talking about his jobs program. He's going to put all these wonderful little tax cuts to stimulate creation of new businesses and jobs. And it all sounds really good in an election year, but here's the problem. Nobody's going to start a new business if they don't know that there are going to be customers out there with money. I don't care how many SBA loans you have in front of me or how many tax breaks you're going to give me for starting a new business. If I look around the marketplace and I don't see people who are going to come into my place of business and buy whatever it is I'm selling, I'm not going to start the business. I don't need the frustration and aggravation. Tax breaks to start a new business, to create jobs, may stimulate some number creation, which is politically useful, but it's not going to turn the economy around. The only way to get this economy going is to get the money back in the hands of the people. That's the only way that it's going to work. Now, getting back to the present day here and talking about taxation, we got a story the other day. Colorado Springs is basically cutting back the services for which they charge local taxes here. And they're turning out the street lights. They're not taking care of the parks anymore. The trash cans aren't being emptied. They're being taken away. They're basically shutting down all the city services and saying, I'm sorry, you know, we either have to do this or you have to raise taxes. Now, it comes across to me that it's a scare tactic. Anytime a government is starting to feel the resentment of the people toward taxes, they'll start cutting services. They won't cut their own salaries, won't cut the bonuses, won't cut the perks. They'll go out and start cutting the stuff that people think they're supposed to be paying taxes for. And when the people complain, the government says, well, you got to pay more taxes. It's a scare tactic. It's a scare tactic. This is the way government is going to operate. I think this tactic at Colorado Springs is going to backfire. Okay, because the anger that we Americans have, it's not just against high taxation, which is very high, but it's against the fact that no matter how much tax we pay, very little of it gets spent on we the taxpayer. The lion's share is going to wars, Israel, and a lavish lifestyle for the elite, like Nancy Pelosi's use of U.S. taxpayer-funded military aircraft to ferry her kids and grandkids around, even though it's not official congressional business. And Barack Obama's statement about freezing domestic spending on the State of the Union, what that really means is very simple. He has admitted, we took all your tax money that you paid us to run the country, and we gave it to the bailouts and the bankers, and we gave it to Wall Street. And sorry, we don't have anything left to spend on you, because what little is in the Treasury, we've got to spend on wars, and we've got to give it to Israel, and we've got to do all this other stuff. So I'm sorry, the taxpayers are kind of on the high-end deal here. It's austerity, and you're going to have to make painful sacrifices. No, we don't. We did not create this mess. We, the American people, did not create this economic disaster. It was created by the bankers and by the U.S. federal government. And they are not going to dump the blame and the cost for it on us. Now, even the corporate media is beginning to point out where the government is fibbing to all of you. MSNBC MSNBC basically came out, we have it linked to the front of whatreallyhappened.com, where the federal government, Federal Reserve, gave banks access to $23.7 trillion in bailout funds. Not the $700 billion they like to talk about with TARP. That's just the number that politicians like to talk about to make it look like it's not that big a deal. $700 billion is not that big a deal. No, $23.7 trillion in liquidity was made available to the banks. Any of it that doesn't get paid back is going to come out of the taxpayers' pocket. And those banks who are paying that money back, guess where they're getting it? They're raising fees on you. So it doesn't matter whether they pay it back or not. You get to pay for it all anyway. It doesn't matter whether you pay it through taxes or through increased fees or increased interest. And we're starting to see interest rates edge up now. They're going to make you pay for the mess no matter what. They'll balance the books. They'll pay themselves huge bonuses and pay increases, and you get stuck with the bill as long as you let it happen. That's what's going on here. They're trying to dress it all up with all their little columns of figures and all their little pretty printed pieces of paper. And Congress will pass some laws and some bills, which are just more pretty printed pieces of paper. And they'll wave those pretty printed pieces of paper at you and they'll say, see, this makes it all legal. This means I have the right to take money from you and give it to my friends at the banks. Okay, well, you know, Adolf Hitler had lots of pretty printed pieces of paper that made everything that he did perfectly legal. When they were rounding up people to send to those slave labor camps, the first thing that went through the door was not the guns of the Gestapo. It was somebody with a pretty printed piece of paper saying, by order of the German government, you are whatever. And they sent them off. It works only if you believe that these pretty printed pieces of paper have power over you. And it's all a fraud. Now, the scale of the fraud is rapidly becoming visible because we're again hearing that the Chinese government is insisting that they have received bogus bars of gold bullion traced back to the U.S., to Fort Knox, and to an American smelter. Now, remember, back in the 1960s, man, maybe you're not old enough to remember this. When I was a kid, I hate to use that cliche because, you know, young people will always roll their eyes and say, oh, all right, here we go. When I was a kid, the money in your pocket had inherent worth. The dimes and the quarters were made out of real silver. The nickels were made out of, as the name implies, nickel. Pennies were made out of solid copper. There was intrinsic worth to the money. Then all of a sudden in the 60s, right after John F. Kennedy got killed, remember he tried to stand up to the Federal Reserve. 5 months later, he was shot dead. Shortly after he was shot dead, the silver money was taken out of circulation. And in its place, we got these clad coins that were just cheap metal slugs plated to look like real money. And as long as the American people believed it was still real money, everything went along just fine, except that now the insiders had all that silver that had been taken out of circulation that they could put away in their vaults and they could use to play games with on the commodities market. It was called clad coinage. And as long as the people believe it was still real money, it worked. Now we're finding out that somebody may have played the same game with the U.S. gold bullion. It's now clad. It's got a tungsten core surrounded by gold. And as long as everybody still believes it's a real gold bullion bar, the system's going to go on working. But now China's blowing the whistle on this one, and this is going to have repercussions. We're going to take a break. We'll be back for the last segment of hour number one after these words from our sponsors.
GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
What this country is coming to, I sure would like to know. If they don't do something, by and by, the rich will live and the poor will die. Doggone, I mean the panic is on.
And
And Aloha America, welcome back to the show here, and we're talking about the economy, we're talking about the fake gold bars. Some of the people in the chat room are saying, well, exactly how is that done? Well, what the Chinese are saying that they have found is they have found these gold bullion bars are not solid gold. They have cores made of tungsten, which is the same density as gold, but obviously much, much less expensive. And so these bars are much less costly to make and certainly obviously worth far less than they would be if they were made out of pure solid gold. And the Chinese are saying that the serial numbers on the bars, which trace where they go and where they come from, go right back to Fort Knox and to an American smelting company. And the suspicion is that the U.S. government is so broke that they have been selling their own gold. Well, it's not actually, it's not their gold. It's our gold. It's the gold of the American people. But the federal government has been selling it in order to keep gold prices down, keep people from deserting the stock market, or simply to raise money for whatever they're trying to do. And they've replaced it with these bogus bars under the theory that, well, you know, it's like with the clad coins. As long as everybody believes it's still a gold bullion bar, because after all, it's got the good faith and trust of the U.S. government behind it, that all would be well. But if this really comes, this may be the reason why the Federal Reserve is fighting an audit. Because if the audit ever got down to the actual hard assets on which the economy is supposedly based, because remember, the reserve system, there are rules that say they can only print up so much fake money as a multiple of the hard assets they have. And if it turns out the hard assets, the gold bars in the Federal Reserve vault in New York, if it turns out they're fake, then the Federal Reserve is insolvent. And that may be the reason they're fighting the audit, Ron Paul's audit, as hard as they are. So it's a huge, huge scandal. And again, with this government, between Saddam's nukes and ClimateGate and SwineGate and all the rest of that, we can't take the government's word on anything. This government doesn't know how to tell the truth. If it ever caught itself telling the truth, it would tell a lie just to stay in training. Now, we had the other day a lady on our show who runs a website called April 15th. Actually, I can't remember the name of it. I'll have to hunt that down for you. And she's organizing a total national strike April 15th through the 18th. We put up another article about that today where this is starting to catch on. People are writing in, they're calling in and saying, yeah, this is a good idea. It's a four-day strike. And I was on the Alex Jones show earlier this morning. We had a caller call in and say, we're going to have protests. We're not just going to sit at home and do nothing. We're going to go out, and we're going to be picketing the banks, and we're going to be picketing the post office. We're going to be basically standing around saying, "We, you know, enough is enough. We're not going to spend any money. We're not going to buy anything. We're not going to work. We're not going to do anything at all. We're going to let the entire system of the United States, you know, private economy, grind to a halt for 4 days. Now, it's not going to bring about any crashing reform, but I think when the Federal Reserve, when the federal government, when the corporate leaders look out and see that we do have a nation of people who are willing to stop work long enough to make a point, they're going to start paying attention to us a little bit more. And again, the message we're sending with this national strike isn't to the leaders of this country. It is to the financial investors in foreign countries who believe that the United States is a safe place to park their money. We talked about this the other day. The SNL bailouts of the 1980s, the bailouts that we went through a year ago, were proof of concept exercises to demonstrate to foreign financial interests that they can put their money into the United States investment market, and no matter what happens, the taxpayers will be forced to cover all the losses. That is the essence of a fascistic economic state. Profits are kept private, losses are socialized. And so beginning with the SNL bailout in the 1980s and then reinforced by the bailouts last year, the message has gone out to these foreign investors that you can put your trillions and trillions of dollars here in the United States of America into our investment banks, and no matter what happens, you can keep the profits and the American people will cover the losses. A national strike of any duration is going to send a clear and unambiguous message to those foreign investors that we, the American people, are not going to be slaved to their financial losses any longer. We're just not going to do it. It's not what we signed up for. In fact, we didn't sign anything. We're willing to work to better our own lives, but we're tired of being worked to death to make other people rich on our backs. We're not going to do it anymore. And that's the message of the national strike. We're going to keep coming back to this issue, but this is actually getting a lot of resonance. We're getting a lot of people saying this is really a very good idea, coming as it does on tax day. All right. Now, another expression of unhappiness with the government is we're starting to see the reemergence of secessionist movements. We probably all read recently that the state of Vermont is fielding a record number of political candidates this election season that are holding secessionist views. They think Vermont should not be part of the United States of America any longer. And it looks like many of them might actually win. And so I went out and I did a web search today about secession movements. I know that we've got a couple here in Hawaii. There's a couple up in Alaska. There's a couple in Texas. There was the Western States Coalition that was doing very well, I think, back at the end of the 90s. I don't know what happened to them since then. But there are a lot of states that are saying, you know, we're going to be better off without the federal government. And let me use Hawaii as an example here. If Hawaii went back to being an independent republic, which is what it was before the U.S. government stole the place, and the U.S. government has admitted they stole it now, Bill Clinton signed a public law apologizing for the illegal annexation of Hawaii and admitting that the Hawaiian people never surrendered their national sovereignty. There is still technically a Republic of Hawaii, and the state of Hawaii has actually given them some land. So there is a physical Republic of Hawaii now. They've got passports and everything. We ought to get Leon Hsu back in here to talk about that. But the bottom line is, if the federal government were to go away, would Hawaii be better off or worse? I think we'd be better off. We wouldn't have our share of this ruinous $40 trillion debt, it's estimated now, that the federal government has run up, that we're all expected to pay. And everybody around here says, well, what about all the military? Well, we'll rent them the land. Or we'll rent it to some other country that wants to come in here and use this as a base in the middle of the Pacific. I don't think there's going to be any shortage of nations wanting to come in and utilize these facilities. I think Hawaii would be much better off as an independent nation again. Certainly the Hawaiians at the time thought they would be better off staying as an independent nation. The same can be said for the Alaskans. Texas was literally grabbed by an act of Congress without any say-so from the native Texans at the time. And years later, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that Congress actually had erred and acted illegally in annexing Texas with a joint declaration of Congress, because that's not the statehood procedure that's in the U.S. Constitution. But the U.S. government was playing fast and loose with the laws even back then. So I put a whole bunch of links up about all these different secession projects and found, interestingly enough, a Zogby poll. And this actually is not current. It's about a few months old, I think. But it said 1 in 5 Americans believe that states have the right to secede. So that's already 20% of the American population agree that states have a right to leave the Union anytime they want to. Now, I know Abraham Lincoln killed a lot of people in defiance of that principle, to preserve the Union. But the reality is that America was created with an act of secession. We seceded from the British Empire. We would not be here today as a nation were it not for an act of secession. Maybe it's time for a repeat. We're going to take a break for news and commercials, and we'll be back after these words from our sponsors and our news people. Stay tuned. Aloha, America.
to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And let's adjust my levels here just a little tiny bit. I'm watching the network news feed here, and it's rather alarming here. They're showing this congressional hearing where Senator Dianne Feinstein is leading this little hearing where they're talking to the CIA about the likelihood of a new terrorist attack sometime in the next 3 to 6 months. This is more of the booga booga. They're pre-selling terror attack for whatever false flag they're going to pull to kick off the war with Iran. And the head of the CIA is saying it's a virtual certainty that Al-Qaeda will attack us within the next 3 to 6 months. All right, I have a problem with that. Unless the CIA is paying these guys to attack us, which is always a possibility, how could they know? I mean, it defies belief that the CIA or FBI or anybody else could in any way, shape, or form be certain that terrorists are coming to do bad things to the United States of America with any degree of certainty, and yet not have the information necessary to get in front of them and say, please stop. We don't want you to do that. It's a joke. It is a joke. They can't possibly know unless they know enough to stop it. It just doesn't make any sense. Unless, of course, as I said, the CIA is paying these guys to do this kind of thing. All righty. Now, getting back to the news here, we were talking about secession movements. We're talking about states' rights. We're talking about a general discontent with the federal government here. The Virginia Senate, state of Virginia, and this is a Democratic-led body. Democrats have the majority in the Virginia Senate, just passed a bill that makes it illegal for any Virginian to be ordered to buy health insurance. This, of course, flies right in the face of Obamacare, which is going to make sure that all Americans have health insurance by ordering them to go out and buy health insurance, which is not what we wanted, by the way. And so Virginia is basically hurling the defy. They're drawing a line in the insurance forms. And this, of course, will lead to a Supreme Court test over whether the federal government actually has a constitutional authority to go into the states and order the citizens of states to spend their money on whatever it is that the members of Congress, campaign donors, happen to be selling. And it's just one more instance in which the United States of America, the people of the United States, the states themselves are standing up and saying, we've really gone too far with this. We've really gone too far with this. Now, remember what I said before, that when the U.S. government and the Federal Reserve were handing out all these trillions of dollars to the bankers, and whatever didn't get paid back was going to come out of taxes, and whatever did get paid back was going to be charged to the people anyway. We're beginning to see it. We're beginning to see it. The banks are now charging the highest interest rates on personal loans in a decade. We're starting to see that in Britain. It's going to start happening here. And what that basically means is that after the U.S. government took all these trillions of dollars from the American people and gave it to the banks to loan back to the people at interest, the bankers are going to say, well, let's jack up the interest rates. Let's make more money. And where they're not thinking is the American people are not going to be borrowing any money, regardless of the interest rates, until we know we have the jobs or the customers with which to pay it back. I don't know who is setting fiscal policy for the United States of America, really, behind the scenes. But they obviously don't understand that an economic system means that the money must be flowing at all levels of the society freely. That you cannot suck all the money out of a country and put it in the banks and expect the system to go on working. It just does not work. Happen. Now, an interesting little development regarding the Mumbai attack of 2008. Apparently, Indian intelligence has been asking the United States government for more information about David Headley. And now we're getting this stonewall from the Central Intelligence Agency. It has been documented that Healey was working for certain U.S. government agencies, and it's beginning to look more and more like the Mumbai attack was another state-sponsored false flag attack to try and turn the Indian government against whoever the designated target is. But again, we're seeing, you know, behind these so-called terrorist attacks, we're not finding Arab Muslim terrorists. We're finding U.S. and British and Israeli agents. Remember when the invasion of Iraq first got started and the Iraqi police caught two British SAS soldiers in a car with Arab disguises and explosives, and they arrested them. And the British government was so terrified that these guys were going to talk about what they were really doing, they literally attacked the Iraqi police station. This was after the invasion, when supposedly the occupying forces and the new civil government were aligned together. But the British forces attacked the police station and broke out these two SAS guys rather than let them be interrogated, just what it was they were doing driving around with Arabic clothing and explosives. All righty, I'm going to get on to ClimateGate. I've kind of like let that go for a while, and I want to get back to it because we're beginning to see more and more stories develop on this. I'll tell you, this is falling apart so fast, and we've got to keep the focus on this. As I was saying on the Alex Jones show earlier today, for anybody who ever wanted to deny that there are government conspiracies to defraud and trick the people, this is one of them. This is the biggest, most obvious one we've ever found. We've got it staked out on the ground in full display for everybody to look at and say, see, there really are these kind of conspiracies between government and media and academia to trick you out of your money, to trick you out of your freedoms, to lie to you, to manipulate you. This is how the government rules you. This is not a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. It is a government of the scammers, by the scammers, and for the scammers. And you are left out of it. You are the feedstock. You're the feed animal. You're the herd to be harvested by the scams or sent off to die in war. That's what's going on here. This idea that we're all one collective democratic republic, it's an illusion. There are the rulers and there are the masses that are there to be taxed and sent off to war. The American people are as blind to the true nature of our leadership and our rulers as were the medieval peasants. The medieval peasants were held in their place by the belief in the rule by divine right. Most Americans are still being held in their little servitude by a belief in the rule of law. And yet we continue to see that our government refuses to obey the law. The law is only to keep you in your place, to keep you subservient. Now, getting back to ClimateGate, Scotland has just recorded the coldest winter in 100 years. We are continuing to see record cold weather around the northern hemisphere. The global warming cultists are saying, that's just weather. That's not climate. We can have really cold weather, but that doesn't mean the climate isn't getting warmer. They're desperate. They're absolutely desperate. Everybody who was caught with their hand in this particular cookie jar, they're trying to find some way that they can either say it was an honest mistake or somebody else's fault. Because we're seeing all these academic institutions, their credibility is being destroyed. Every media outlet that stood up there and said, oh, yes, global warming is real, their credibility is destroyed. Still to this very day on the National Geographic Channel and Discovery, almost every show out there includes the obvious, obligatory, gratuitous mention about global warming is causing this. And it's too expensive to go back and re-edit all those shows. They're having to continue to show them. They're already in the rotation. And yet every time they're going out there with global warming, either they're thinking that they can still bulldoze their way through this agenda, or they have to understand if their own credibility is being destroyed. It really is. All right, we're going to take a break here. Join us on the air, 866-582-9933, 866-582-9933. When we come back, more about ClimateGate, some specific scandals that are emerging even now. Remember that old saying from Vaudeville? Folks, you ain't seen nothing yet.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network. Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're talking about ClimateGate. We're going over this one again here, simply because this absolutely proves, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that yes, Virginia, there are conspiracies to defraud the people of the United States, the people of planet Earth. A huge, huge scam. I know that in years past, people say, oh, you could never have a conspiracy like that. It would take too many people. Somebody would blow the whistle. In this case, somebody did. It was obvious that there were problems with the global warming hoax even before the ClimateGate emails. But whoever leaked those emails did the world a tremendous service when they did that. Now, more information is starting to come out because the ClimateGate leaks have forced these various institutions to start coming up with the raw data. For the longest time, we were getting this idea of, like, we have these very nicely bound reports, personally autographed by Al Gore, that say that the Earth is getting warmer and it's all your fault and you have to pay a carbon tax. And because the fundamental principle of scientific inquiry is reproducibility, we had other scientists coming and say, okay, well, can we see the raw data and let's run the analysis for ourselves? And the IPCC said, oh, no, wait, the raw data, we own that. That's proprietary, and it's guarded, and it's a da-da-da-da. And so basically you got this sort of a black box approach to science. We will tell you what's going on, and you just have to take our word for it, because, heck, after all, we're with the United Nations. We wouldn't lie to you. Well, yes, they did. And because of the ClimateGate scandal, the raw data started to come out. People are looking at it, and they're beginning to realize this was really a huge, huge bottle of snake oil they were trying to pour all over us and tell us it was raining. All right, stories that are coming out here. The head of the IPCC was told before the Copenhagen conference that the claims made in their report about the Himalayan glaciers were bogus. He knew. This guy, Pachuri, he knew before Copenhagen that this was not a true fact, that it was completely bogus. He was told about it before Copenhagen, and he kept it secret. We, you know, they don't need to know that it's a fiction. Now, a big issue in terms of the analysis of Earth's temperature has been called the urban heat island effect. We know cities tend to be warmer than the surrounding planet. We know that out in rural spaces, foliage absorbs sunlight, and because they're using the energy to photosynthesize food, they do not re-radiate anywhere near as much heat. The heat is being converted into chemical energy. When you're on concrete, cement, any of those urban construction materials, the sunlight hits it, it is re-radiated as heat. So they call it the urban island heat effect. Cities are warm places. Plus you have air conditioners in the buildings that are pumping the heat that's inside the building to the outside, where the temperature sensors happen to be. And we have shown before photographs of some of the temperature sensors used by the climate cult, and shown they're right in the outflow of air conditioners, which means they're being artificially given higher readings. We had one photo that we've posted where a temperature sensing station was right next to a trash incinerator. Gee, I wonder if they're getting higher numbers off of that one. And so there's been this ongoing debate about the urban versus the rural temperature sensing stations. Now that the original raw data is coming out, scientists have gone back, scientists who are not on the payroll of Al Gore, I might add, have gone back and they've looked at only the rural temperature sensors and found that they're not showing any temperature increase since the year 1900 for the entire century. Now, we reported a couple of weeks ago where it turned out that the Hadley CRU and IPCC and Penn State were all engaging in this little bit of a swindle where over the last decade, they were reducing the list of temperature sensors that they were using to calculate global temperature, and they were preferentially discarding the rural temperature sensors, which meant that more and more of the contribution to the numbers they were getting were coming from these temperature sensors in the urban environment, which created an artificially increasing result. Now, a new story has come out just today. It's titled Strange Case of Moving Weather Posts and a Scientist Under Siege, and it goes back to the gentleman at Hadley CRU, and I'm blanking on his name again here because I don't have it in my talking points list. But the basic, Phil Jones. He's got two scandals on his case today. They discovered that Phil Jones, in analyzing the data from Chinese temperature sensors, was not able to document where the sensors were located. And he was not able to document that they were not being moved. Scientists have come back and confirmed that these temperature sensors were being moved several times during the period temperatures were being taken, which invalidates their results. And the implication is that some of these temperature sensors may have been preferentially moved to warmer and warmer locations in order to produce the data to support the global warming agenda. Now, Professor Phil Jones, who's the center criminal over at the University of East Anglia's Climate Research Unit, the Hadley CRU, and he's the director of it, now he's been accused of literally cherry-picking data, where data was coming into Hadley CRU that did not support the global warming agenda, that he simply tossed it out. We call it the Zen rule of science: draw the curves and then plot the data. Any data that it doesn't fit the curve, just toss it out. It's, you know, nobody needs to see it. So once again, we're getting this idea that they were not actually measuring anything. They were going out and creating temperature readings to conform to a desired political agenda. Now, I don't know how many more of these we're going to have to come up with. We've got Stormgate, Glaciergate, all of these situations. It is beyond question that the science was being fixed around the political agenda. Remember the Downing Street memo, which was the first hard evidence we had from inside Great Britain that the justification for the war in Iraq was a lie. And they said the propaganda or the intelligence information was being fixed around the political agenda of going to war. They only wanted to hear that intelligence information that supported the case for war. That's what's going on here as well. Al Gore and the United Nations were pushing an agenda for global government and global carbon taxation on the basis of a warming globe. And they only wanted to see the data that supported that agenda. They weren't interested in what was really going on. They were there to sell you a big bottle of snake oil. So the bottom line is, the only thing that's really melting in all of this heat is the global warming cult's credibility. And a lot of them are in disarray. They're trying to figure out some way that they can salvage their own reputations, make it sound like it was just a harmless accident, and golly gee shuckies, will be more careful next time. They certainly don't want to admit it was a deliberate plot to defraud the entire planet. And we still have the hardcore global warming cult. They're going to come back next summer when it's warm and say, see, we told you it's getting warmer. We're going to take a break. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Some are maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. If you gotta have proof, just try it yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far 5:15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. The chat room, they're talking about this gigantic, it's called an island of floating plastic in the Pacific. It's off to the northwest here. And basically what it is, because of the trade currents, and great cyclic ocean currents, a lot of the pollution that has been dumped into the Pacific Ocean, and there is a lot of it, there's no kidding about it, has sort of clustered together in this gigantic zone. Now, it's not an island in the sense that you could get out of your boat and walk on it. It is simply an increasing area of pollution density, and you will find plastic bottle caps and beer tabs and all kinds of stuff that floats is just sort of collected together in this zone, and it's a huge mess. And the people in the chat room were asking, well, you know, if we're worried about the world and the climate, why aren't we cleaning that up? And the important thing to keep in mind is for operators like Al Gore, who are using the environment to extract money from you, they're never going to use an issue where they would have to be seen as actually doing something about it, like going out there with a ship and a net and scooping the stuff up and taking it to a landfill, because then the progress or the lack of progress is immediately visible to all. What they want is something that they can talk about, like the level of carbon dioxide in the air, where the numbers are really small percentages, where they can take all this money and they can say, we're continuing to study the problem and we're doing this and we're doing that and we're lowering carbon emissions. And the bottom line is that it's almost impossible to say whether they're really having the effect that they claim to have or not. I mean, given the fact that they have been screaming the world is getting warmer and we're in the middle of this incredibly harsh winter, tells you how completely disconnected from reality they already are. So they could take all this money and they could lower carbon emissions and they could make all the promises and claims in their research in years to come where they could say, see, our new numbers show that we're having a positive impact, and nobody could challenge that. But something concrete like actually cleaning the pollution up, they'd have to be seen doing it, and that means spending some of that money that they're taking from the people. And that is why they're not going out there and talking about the more obvious threats to our environment. Because they're obvious enough where they'd have to be seen doing something about the problem or lose their credibility. And that's why. Now, speaking of credibility here, interestingly enough, despite all the promises about transparency in government, President Obama and the budget director, Peter Orszag, have created this little provision in the 2011 budget that they just unveiled first part of the week, yesterday actually, where they're creating this little black box into which taxes on carbon that Obama is going to implement by executive order. Even though Copenhagen is a disaster, nothing was agreed to, and ClimateGate has made it obvious this is a fraud, Obama is pressing ahead with declaring carbon taxes by executive order, by royal fiat, if you will, and it's going to go into this little black box with no accountability from which they will then dispense money on climate change. That's not really where it's going to go. Barack Obama was desperate for the money from carbon taxes from Copenhagen in order to balance the government's budget. He didn't get it. That's why they're talking about a record $1.6 trillion deficit for next year. Because they need to spend the money. They've got to give it to Israel. They got to buy the bombs. And there's nothing left over for the people. And Obama wanted the carbon tax money, and he didn't get that. And he wanted taxes from all the vaccines that were going to be sold for the swine flu hoax. That's not happening now. And so now he's going to simply declare that you're going to buy health insurance by executive order so that they can get the tax revenues from the health insurance companies. And they're going to declare carbon taxes by executive fiat. And the budget will take that money in. And where it gets spent, nobody will really know. It's not going to be spent on the environment. The U.S. government has used environment as a cover for all kinds of nefarious purposes going all the way back to the Richard Nixon administration. Nixon created the EPA, and it wasn't to protect the environment. It was as a cover for the fact that having run out of gold at Fort Knox, not counting the tungsten bars, that the U.S. government needed to start using vast tracts of public land as collateral on the national debt. And the government didn't want to tell the American taxpayer, we're placing your national parks and your mineral rights as hawk for more government borrowing and spending. So they said, we're going to preserve the environment for the future generations, and we're going to have the wilderness areas that you're not allowed to go into. We're going to have the heritage rivers that you're not allowed to go into, and we're going to have all these the wetlands and this and that. And basically what it was taking all of these areas of our natural beauty and our natural resources and locking them away from the American people because they're being held as collateral by the foreign holders of U.S. government debt. The U.S. government, under the guise of environmentalism, has hawked the entire nation. They've pawned your national heritage to cover their government debt. Now, I don't know that the U.S. government legally had the authority to do that. And when the U.S. government collapses and those foreign powers show up and say, well, look, we own the Grand Canyon now, I'm going to say, you show me a contract with 300 million American signatures on it that said we agree to that. Because the federal government did not have the legal authority to do that. I don't think they even had the legal authority to go into debt. I know after the Civil War, they passed a constitutional amendment saying the validity of the government debt may not be questioned, but I'm going to question it. I'm going to question it because it seems that the government is always borrowing and spending and they're selling our wealth to cover it, or they're just confiscating it from us. It's been a grand looting all along here. So, moving around, so they've got this little slush fund and Obama's just going to force this agenda. They're going to try and force carbon taxes on us. They're going to force us to buy health insurance, not because the insurance is any good. And Obama is now admitting you don't get to pick which health insurance company you're going to go to. You may not even be able to pick your own doctor anymore under the current provisions of Obamacare. Its sole purpose is to stimulate more spending into the medical industry, which is going to be profitable for the medical industry. And, of course, the government gets an immediate boost in tax revenues, which is what they're thinking about it. Meanwhile, Obama is pledging another $215 million for the naked body scanners at the airport, even though they're a complete violation of human rights. I guess Obama doesn't consider that we're human anymore. And the bottom line is that these naked body scanners are always going to show high-density metal objects that the sales demonstrations always tuck down somebody's pants as a big gun that you couldn't see the bulge. You need to x-ray them. You can't see the outline of a Beretta, you know, shoved into their blue jeans, or a knife or other such things. Those scanners will show them up. But the low density explosives being used by the crotch bombers and other sophisticated hoaxers, they don't show up in these machines. The crotch bomber went through one of these machines in Amsterdam, and he still got on the airplane. So the U.S. government is going to fork over another $215 million of your tax money for machines to let some loser who couldn't get a job at the local McDonald's restaurant see you naked. And then they wonder why the American people are very unhappy with this federal government. All righty, we're getting down here to the end of the show here. We've got one more segment to go to, and amazing, no phone calls this show here. I think everybody's out there watching the Lost premiere. Hoisting with my own petard here. When we come back, I want to talk about Israel. They're rattling their sabers. They're getting crazy. They're trying to basically sell this idea of war with Iran as long as the Americans get to fight it. It looks like they're talking about war with Syria, war with Lebanon, as long as they can try and make it look like the victim's fault. Same thing they're doing in Gaza. They've responded to the Goldstone report. We got a lot of stuff to talk about that. FBI has found another Ponzi-style scheme. I don't think I want to polish them up. Right now I'm watching the news feed here. There are these Pakistani prisoners of the United States claiming they were tortured by the FBI, and the FBI is out there making the usual, we never do that kind of thing. And, of course, we know they have been doing that kind of thing all along. Go back and read the history of COINTELPRO. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with the last segment of today's show after these words from our sponsors.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means
they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down in Gaza tonight.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And even though the Lost recap has already started on the East Coast of the United States, I guess not everybody's watching it because we've got callers on the line. They always jam up at the end of the show. And we're going to get to you in just a minute. But I did want to get through this one story. It's we have it linked to the front page of whatreallyhappened.com. And its headline, Propaganda Alert, Israel Trying to Make It Look Like Coming Invasion of Lebanon is All Lebanon's Fault. And the actual news story headline, U.S. Intelligence Finds 5,000 Hezbollah Training to Seize Galilee Towns. Now, remember my comment yesterday on the story where Israel had kidnapped a Lebanese youth, and he was later released. And then, you know, Israel's going to provoke until they get a reaction and then claim the reaction is the initiating event in order to blame Lebanon for the resulting attack. During the last Lebanese war, two Israeli soldiers in uniform walked across the border into Lebanon and were arrested, as anybody is going to be who walks across the border without permission wearing the uniform of the enemy. Israel screamed, oh my goodness, they have been kidnapped, and the war in Lebanon was on. Hitler did the same thing, claiming that Poland was getting ready to invade Germany. Okay, so this is an old stick, and again, Operation Cast Lead. There had been a 6-month ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. Israel broke it on November 4th, 2008, attacked Gaza without provocation, killed 6 Hamas. The next day, Hamas said, I guess the ceasefire is over. And Israel said, aha, Hamas says the ceasefire is over. And they proceeded to ramp things up to Operation Cast Lead, to which they're now trying to tap dance out of the war crimes charges on that. All right, we're going to go to the phones here. Let's see, Donnie in California. Aloha, Donnie. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Aloha, Mike. Thanks for taking my call. I was very troubled today by reading the Orange County Register newspaper today. There was an article in the local section that talks about the Los Alamitos Air Base is going to be used for urban exercises between now and February 12th. And I was kind of troubled by that based on the fact that the trend nowadays across the United States, you know, where the military is coming in and operating checkpoints and making a presence felt. Well, now it's finally hitting Southern California here in the city of Los Alamitos and surrounding cities. A quick tidbit of this article reads, the exercises are expected to help the Marines learn strategies for urban missions. Residents can watch the training from a distance but are asked not to approach any aircraft or Marines. The training will also affect Seal Beach, Cypress, and Garden Grove. And I wanted to see or hear your comments about that. And what's your take on that?
Well, you know, the problem is that the military has always faced a problem in dealing with urban warfare. I mean, that's one of the reasons the Soviet Union got into such trouble in Afghanistan and why we're in trouble there, why we're bogged down in Iraq. When you're out in open field and you're facing an enemy and they've got lines and you've got lines and you're in uniform and they're in uniform, it's a very different situation. When you're working in the urban environment against urban guerrillas, it's a war of attrition, and it generally works against the invader. The urban guerrillas have got the home court advantage, so to speak. And so all of these urban training exercises, they're training the Marines to operate in cities for urban pacification. Unfortunately, and in direct violation of posse comitatus, they're training basically to put down a rebellion here in the United States. I think pretty much everybody knows that we're heading for one. The U.S. government is just going to keep on pushing us and taking money from us until somebody somewhere starts to fight back. And again, I advise against that, because in the eyes of world opinion, the side that starts shooting first is going to be seen as the villain. It is in the advantage of all the people of the United States and the world that the government be seen as being the oppressor right from the start. So they may set up a dirty trick, stage a phony, a false flag attack or something like that. There's evidence that the Symbionese Liberation Army back in the 60s, the whole Patty Hearst kidnapping thing, that Sing Q and the leaders of the SLA were in fact FBI informants, and that's why their bodies were not found in the house that was burned down with the SLA inside it. Somehow, magically, they had disappeared and they were never seen again. All right, so it's a worrying sign. Our army is being trained to basically conquer the American city streets. Ultimately, though, I think their training for, you know, the training is always based around an expectation of how the American people might react to a military dictatorship in this country. But inevitably, and again, this is what the Soviets found in Afghanistan, what is really going to happen on the ground is never what the war planners think is going to happen on the ground. And that's why the Soviets lost in Afghanistan, why the United States is losing in Iraq, why we lost in Vietnam, and why we're likely to lose the world war that they're trying so hard to get into.
Oh, very good. Okay.
All right. Thanks an awful lot. And we're going to switch over to Ed in Pennsylvania. Aloha, Ed. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hi, Mike. I have a background in raising fish and ponds and stuff, and it would be so easy to raise fish in the ocean. All they need is, like, structure, actually floating plastic like you're talking about, you know? And they could make this world into a paradise.
Well, they could. What's really interesting about living here in Hawaii is the revelation. If you drive around our coastlines, and I don't mean the ones that are built up for the resorts, but you get back to the outlying areas, if you want to call it, and you will see the remains of all of these ancient fish ponds that the Hawaiian people set up. They were master fish farmers, and they're huge. As a matter of fact, one of the larger ones over at Kualoa Ranch is used as a film location. Not only for Lost, but for Tears of the Sun, the new Fantasy Island. It's this huge, huge, artificially constructed lagoon, and it has these grates that allow little fish to swim in, and big fish cannot get out. And over time, you've got this wonderful, automatically self-sustaining fish farm, and it supported the population of the island. Most people don't realize it, but when Captain Cook landed on the island of Oahu, the population of the indigenous Hawaiians was pretty much the same as the population we have on the island now, and they were being perfectly well supported between the fish and the pig population. And so it is possible to do that. Now, I don't think the plastic island is going to be useful for fish farming. Most of it's toxic. We're finding where, you know, fish will swim into these little plastic rings, and as they grow up, the rings constrict them, and it's a very, very painful existence. I think that if somebody had the political will, we could take some of these huge warships, take the guns off of them, string some nets between them, and scoop this mess up. But nobody's going to do it because they can't make money doing it. We don't have good recycling technology yet. And again, all of this environmental stuff that you see on TV, it's all about soaking the people for money. You feel good because you send in a check to this or that fund, and you feel like you've done something for planet Earth. And in point of fact, all you've really done is you've made Al Gore and his people a little bit richer.
It's a war against humans, brother.
Yes, it is. It is. The human being is the only animal that domesticates himself. And right now, the people running the ranch, they are treating us pretty much the way any dairy farmer treats their cattle. Too many of them, start killing them off. Cut them up for meat, milk them for taxes or milk or whatever. And, absolutely, the displayed attitude of dehumanization by our government towards the ordinary American citizen, it's pretty obvious and pretty heavy-handed. Okay?
Thank you, Mike. Thanks, Mike.
All right, thanks a lot for the call. All right, we're coming down to the end of the show here, and let's see, Israel is out there again threatening Iran with a heavy price. Uzi Arad, senior advisor to the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, said yesterday that he believes the situation with Iran may escalate. Tehran may have to pay a heavy price for what he called defying the world. Okay, Iran is not defying the world. It's defying the United States, which is not the same thing. It's defying Israel, which is not the same thing. Obviously, in Israel's point of view, defying Israel's defying the world, because Israel sees itself as the new center of global governance. But the bottom line is, again, Iran is complying with the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. They're building power stations and medical isotopes. It is Israel that is building nuclear weapons in a secret lab, not so secret anymore, underneath their reactor at Dimona. We're being lied into a confrontation with Iran just as we were lied into a confrontation with Iraq. And again, the author of the lie continues to be Israel, 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 Israel. It is Israel that is sending your children off to die in their wars. And they bought the U.S. Congress to get them to go along with it. All right, we're going to stop here. Don't forget to tune into the Lost premiere tonight. We're going to be back tomorrow at 5 p.m. Central here on the Genesis Communication Network. Until tomorrow, stay safe, stay well, hug your loved ones, be angry, be skeptical. Question everything the government says because it's all bovine excrement. And aloha, America.